As the Greek forces pulled back towards Athens, the debate then became, shall we stand here and fight, or shall we pull back even further? And even at this point, when the Greeks have already fought against the Persians now on a couple of occasions, the story is still one of dissent in the ranks of the Greeks. Some of the Greek forces maintained that their policy should be withdraw beyond the isthmus, the narrow neck of land separating the Peloponnese from the mainland, and fight behind that wall. Now, there were two obvious reasons why this was not a satisfactory policy for all the Greeks. For those who lived north of the isthmus, the policy meant abandoning their own territory. And perhaps more seriously even than that, it was not a policy that made good strategic sense, since it did not break the power of the Persian navy. And so there was debate and dissension within the Greek ranks right on the eve of battle. Do we stay and fight, or do we cut and run? Fortunately, through a combination of duplicity, threats, and bribery, it's a little hard to know exactly where the truth lies here, but through some combination of these, the wily Athenian strategist Themistocles was able to keep the Greeks at Salamis. It's suggested in our sources that he may have sent a message to the Persian king saying the Greeks are about to cut and run, and that as a result the Persian king sent his navy to block the two ends of the Salamis Channel. Now, whether Themistocles had to go that far to get the Greeks to stay, we can't say with absolute certainty, but we do know that in the Straits of Salamis, that is to say between the island of Salamis and the mainland, close to Athens, the smaller and more manoeuvrable Greek navy engaged and defeated the larger and more ponderous ships of the Persian fleet, their Phoenician ships. And so, in 480, finally, the Greeks win their first major victory against the Persians at Salamis. Now, the impression that one often gets from reading ancient accounts of this is that this broke the back of the Persians, that the Greeks had won as a result of their victory at Salamis. This is not the truth, though the Greeks might like to have thought so, particularly the Athenians. Though Xerxes left Greece at this point, and though his navy had been decisively defeated, the Persian army had not been. And the Persian army did not quit Greece, it simply withdrew back into northern central Greece to take up its winter quarters. And then, in 479, in the following campaigning season, it once again marched south, and in fact, for a second time, physically sacked the city of Athens. So, defeat of the Persians was not solely due to the Athenians at Salamis at all. The second component in their defeat came in 479, when the Persian army was finally brought to battle in the field by the combined forces of the Greeks at Plataea in Boeotia in central Greece. And it was there that the Persians were decisively defeated by the Greeks, particularly led by the Spartans. It was then that finally the Persian forces quit Greece, and it is from that time, 479, that we can speak of the defeat of the Persians and the end of the Persian wars and the Persian invasions. It had ended well in this respect. Honours were split between the two major Greek forces. The Spartans could claim the glory on the field of Plataea, the Athenians could claim the glory of the navy and the victory at Salamis. It's also true that from this time onwards, Persian influence in Greek affairs diminished radically. We do not face another invasion by the Persians, and it will be another 100 years, really, or close to 100 years, before the Persians are able to deeply influence the internal affairs of the Greeks. And of course, with the campaigns of Alexander in the late 4th century, the whole story will be inverted, as the Greeks will in fact take the war to Persia. But while real Persian influence in Greek affairs was reduced from 479 onwards, the victory of the Athenians, the Spartans, and the rest of the Greeks had enormous consequences for the Greeks themselves. It's from this time onwards, really, that we find the Greeks more fully articulating a sense of their Greek identity as opposed to another identity. In this case, the Persians playing the role of the other. You may remember in a very early lecture in this series, we talked about the notion of alterite, of defining oneself in relation to another culture. From this time on, the Persians will play that role for the Greeks as that alien other culture. In fact, one very good book written on the Greeks of the 5th century is called The Mirror of Herodotus, claiming that when Herodotus looked at the Persians, he was really looking, in a sense, in a mirror, seeing the negative reflection of what the Greeks liked to see of themselves. Consequences of this victory were wide-ranging and far-reaching. It is from this time, for example, that we find the Greeks in their political discourse often using the term eleutheria, meaning freedom.